We continue the conversation Tuesday, August 6, 2019. Thank you for being here. Going in a different direction for a few minutes now, heading a different direction. Genevieve Wood is the leading voice for the Heritage Foundation, senior advisor and spokesperson, one of the founding members of the Daily Signal. The headline today, Why Welfare Has Not Cured Poverty. Genevieve, welcome back.
Good morning, sir. Good to be with you.
So good to have you here. So it's been more than 50 years since the Great Society of Lyndon Baines Johnson came into being. And in 1965, the poverty rate in America was about 12.5%. In 2019, the poverty rate in America is about 12.5%. We spent $28 trillion, roughly, on these programs rolled out in the 1960s. The only thing we've succeeded in doing, really, Genevieve, is we shifted the burden of poverty from old people to young people. Older people aren't in poverty as much today as children are. And not to mention, our poverty rate, by the way, is 33 times higher than the world average. We do have that going for us. But tell me why welfare has not cured poverty. Your thoughts.
Well, because I think we've been treating it with the wrong medicine, if you will. I mean, the idea of if the right medicine is just spend more money, as you rightly pointed out, then we should have solved poverty a long time ago. But the reality is, just spending more money isn't the answer. People shouldn't be on welfare programs their entire lives. They're able-bodied folks, which most of the people on welfare today in this country are. And by the way, we have about 40 million Americans that we consider poor today, being below the poverty level. The majority of those people are able-bodied, meaning they're physically able, they're mentally able, they should be working. But we've created a system that pays many folks more money to stay home and not work than it does to actually encourage them to go out and get a job, a starter job, and then work up the ladder. Now, you know, this is something that's been going on for years. This isn't recent. But as you pointed out, we spend about $1 trillion a year across about 80 different government programs. Let's say we have 40 million Americans who we consider poor. We could basically give every single one of those people $25,000 a year. If you're a family of three, that's $75,000. If you're a family of four, that's $100,000. I mean, that's a lot better income than most people on welfare have right now. But by the time it gets through the federal government and the state governments, they end up with a lot less. But my point being is the idea that we're not spending a lot of money and that's, you know, we just need to spend more clearly isn't the answer. We need to be encouraging people to get jobs where they can make better salaries, where they can feel good about what they're doing, and where their children see them going to work and then decide to become part of the workforce themselves. Because as we know, children raised in homes where they're heavily subsidized and where they're on welfare, unfortunately, tend to repeat that cycle themselves.
That's correct, because when you look at people that have jobs, and it doesn't matter what the job pays, somebody that has a job that they go to on a regular basis, it becomes part of their identity. And the better the job, the more strongly it associates with their identity many times, right? It builds self-esteem. It builds confidence and character and qualities that we want of our fellow citizens in society.
That's right.
Because when you spend $1 trillion, you might as well have a basic universal income as opposed to squandering it through the government the way it is now.
That's right. But the reality is, as you said, you know, you can have a basic income, but, you know, what do you feel your worth is if you're not contributing in a way to society? And you're,
right.
You know, and I think that's what's very sad to me about these programs. It's not that we're just spending a lot of money and that we're having to have taxes to do so. It's what it means for these individuals as individuals. And I think their self-worth and their belief that they can actually do more than what they're doing is often curved. They don't feel they can do more because that's what they've seen their family always be a part of. That's what they saw their mom or their dad always be a part of. And we should point out, welfare has had a real history of breaking apart families.
It certainly does.
It would pay mothers more if there was no dad involved.
That's right. We incentivize the removal of dad from the home.
People are not stupid.
One of the big problems with America, I believe, and I haven't looked at these two shooters in Dayton and El Paso, But there is a common theme that runs through these shooters oftentimes, these mass shooting killers. And that is they come from fatherless, single-parent homes. Single moms only. And I'm not taking issue with single moms, but I'm telling you there are not enough dads in America. And when you look at these shooters, you will often find there was no father figure in the home. And I don't know if it's true of these two, but I'm going to guess. I'm going to put my money on the odds. And the odds are that these two came from homes that had no father in the family because we have, and I'm not saying it's about welfare, but when you take the father out of the home and you have economic stress in that family, nothing good comes from that. We have to incentivize putting fathers back in the home. Yes or no?
You're absolutely right. And it's not just crime and it's not just murder rates. I mean, when you look at it, the success of a child, if you want to know what are the best chances of a child growing up to be healthy, not getting on drugs, not going to prison, not having children out of wedlock, the number one indicator in all of those cases is whether the child was raised in a two-parent household. It's not what did their dad or mom make. It's not necessarily what neighborhood they grew up in. It's not what school they went to.
Right.
The number one indicator in all of those factors is did they come from a two-parent home where both parents were present. So you're right, it has a huge impact. And that's not knocking single parents. Some people have no option.
That's right.
The reality is, as a society, when we've supported programs that frankly intentionally end up creating those scenarios, we need to take a hard second look at what we're doing.
That's right. Poor kids need dads. I mean, that's the takeaway. Poor kids
all
need
kids
dads.
Need dads.
That's
all
right.
Kids, I mean, you know, a lot of, and this is a thing. It's like you have rich kids that come from really screwed up homes, and you see them do a lot of screwed up bad things. It's because money isn't the answer. It's not the answer from the federal government. It's not the answer in your own personal household. Money can do a lot of nice things, but it can't provide love. It can't provide wisdom. It can't provide, you know, confidence in a way that a parent or someone in your life can do. And so these programs, unfortunately, have really replaced a paycheck from taxpayers and have basically will be the parent, basically. They'll never be the parent that a mom or dad can be.
Well, you look at, and I'll give you a great example of that. Adam Lanza, the Newtown killer, came from a very wealthy set of parents, but his father had basically disowned him, hadn't seen him since he was 9 or 10 years old. And it led to the massacre at Newtown. And that's why, again, you look at a common thread of common problems in this country, it's de-incentivizing the nuclear family in general, whether it's in welfare or anywhere else in society. The destruction of the nuclear family has led to a lot of problems we're seeing today. I have no question about it. Genevieve, I'll give you the last word.
You're spot on, and I would encourage anybody want to look at this issue further. You can look at my piece. Look at the piece that we just put up about Baltimore by the president of the Heritage Foundation talking about these very things. It's not going to be the government that solves it. It's going to be civil society, and it's going to be families staying together as families.
And on a side note, Uruguay has issued a travel advisory for its residents coming to America. Don't go to Baltimore, said the Uruguayan government. Are they racist in Uruguay? Because they said don't go to Baltimore. Anyhow, I'm just having some fun with that. Genevieve Wood, thank you for being here from the Heritage Foundation.
Thank you, Steve.
Always a pleasure. 41 after on this Tuesday. We'll be right back.
The best one ever with MyPureHealthSolutions.com. Lose weight, detox, and balance your hormones in as little as 25 days with MyPureHealthSolutions.com, formerly Nutrimost. This isn't one of those yo-yo diets where you lose weight with shakes or bars, then put it all back on again when you go back to real food. MyPureHealthSolutions.com uses real food from the grocery store. Our health coaches will support you every step of the way and track your progress. Lose weight and make this the best new year ever with MyPureHealthSolutions.com. That's MyPureHealthSolutions.com.
Student safety affects us all, and you can make a difference using OK to Say.
Did you know that in 81% of violent incidents in U.S. schools, at least one other person had information that a school attack was planned but failed to report it?
How many lives could have been saved if just one person had said something?
OK to Say can change that. OK to Say is an easy and confidential way for Michigan students to report anything that threatens their safety or the safety of others.
If you see or hear something that doesn't seem right, You can submit a confidential tip using the OK to Say mobile app.
Or you can submit by text, email, the OK to Say website, or call 8555-OK-TO-SAY.
The tip information is confidential, so you never have to worry about retaliation, rejection, or being labeled a snitch. It's that easy.
You might be the one person who helps to prevent a tragedy.
Take a stand and protect yourself and others by using OK to Say. Because if you won't, who will?
This message sponsored by OK to Say and MAB.
Every week at Ellie's Place, peer support groups help hundreds of children and teens learn to cope and begin to heal after the death of a parent, sibling, or someone close to them.
It just made me feel like I wasn't the only one going through this.
1 in 12 children in Michigan will experience the death of a parent or sibling before the age of 18. At Ellie's Place, children interact with peers who've suffered a similar loss and express their emotions in a secure and empowering environment. Learn more at elliesplace.org.